This is an iHeart podcast.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a very special Memorial Day show where we take the entire show and just honor the fallen, honor those who frankly can't hear it, but it's still important for a country to remember them and honor them. It's important for the future generations to hear us honoring them. Joining me now, Javier Mackey. Javier, before we get into Robbie Miller, who are you?
So I served with Rob on the Special Forces Operational Detachment for two years, and I was his engineer. He was the weapons sergeant, and we served together for about two and a half years on our first team, and I retired. You know, I survived the event that Rob gave his life for, but I went on to deploy several more times after that incident, and later retired out of the Army back in 2018, and I've been enjoying my life as a civilian since.
Who was, before we get to that day and the incident and whatnot, tell us about Rob. Who was this guy? What kind of guy was he? What did he love? What did he hate? Were you close? Tell us about him.
So, all right. So we first met Robbie the day he arrived to the team room. And I don't remember, but it was in 2005. I'm not sure which month of the year it was. But we had been prepared prior to his arrival that we were going to get he was part of the 18 X-ray program, which was a recruiting effort that recruited prospective Green Berets off the street. And they had to be there's a lot of criteria they had to fit, one of which they had to be 21 years old with some college experience. Robbie was one of those individuals. And then in 2005, after having gone to basic training, completed airborne school and all his requirements for getting selected to be a Green Beret and the Special Forces qualifications, he arrived to our team ready to go. And when we met Robbie, so a little backstory to our arrival, his arrival into the Army is a lot different than ours, than the guys who came ahead of him.
How so?
So our process of getting into becoming a Green Beret was a lot different. We had to first have had at least 4 years in the Army prior to going to selection. We had to be an E4 or a specialist or a corporal promotable to sergeant before going to the selection process. And then once you were selected, there was no preparation course provided for us. And we went to selection. And while we were in the Q course, once you got selected, you go through the Q course. And that's where we started meeting these X-rays. And everybody loved them because by the time they got to the point where we were at, they were groomed to be, you know, they were groomed and they understood the expectations that got them there. That being said, when we got to our teams, you know, we got a little bit of hazing from the guys when we got there, and it was a little rough for me. It was a hard transition for myself. And so, you know how it is when, you've just gone through the gauntlet of being the new guy. And then you get a new guy on the team, you just wait. So we were all waiting to see us younger guys on the team. We were all having gone through everything that we'd gone through. We were waiting to see what's going to be a reaction. You know, how are they going to treat? How are the older senior guys going to retreat the new guys? And Robbie was the first 18 X-ray to walk through that door.
Oof.
And when he walked through that door, the senior guys treated him like he had been there for 5 years and that he had a reputation. Like, they love, and we kind of looked at ourselves like, WTF, dude, what the heck? And we looked at this kid, and there's nothing we can do but like him because he came in with this infectious smile. He's a little goofy, but you can, he was in shape, and he knew his guns. And so I was like, at first I was a little jealous, a little bitter because he didn't get the same treatment and same welcome that we came in with. But I was glad that the team had moved on from that mentality and welcomed, you know, the next generation in. Like, hey, you know, it was kind of stupid to put these guys through what they went through. And it's time to change that. And so with that,
Javier, sorry to interrupt you real quick. The 99.99% of the people listening, they aren't Green Berets, and I'm certainly not a Green Beret. How big is a team? What's a team made up of? What's he walking into?
All right, so he's walking into each operational team has a captain, all right?
Okay.
And then after the captain, you have a warrant officer. So the captain's MOS is a 18 Alpha, and that's the Army's Military Occupational Specialty numbering code for that position. And then the warrant officer is a warrant officer is someone who was an NCO at one point and became a technician, a technician of sorts. So he is given the designation of 180 Alpha. And the warrant officer is probably one of the more, he's probably the least spoken about, but is the, one of the key leaders within a Special Forces attachment.
Why? What makes the warrant officer so important? Again, no, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Again, we're speaking with Javier Mackey, so, former Special Forces. He's coming on. He's going to tell us pretty soon about Robbie Miller, Medal of Honor earner in Afghanistan. All right, why is the warrant officer so important?
Warrant officers, they analyze and break down the scope of the mission and help us understand it better, help the members of the team understand it better. And as with that, the captain, he's the face of the team. And he is the one who's talking to the he's the one leading key leader engagements with the local populace. He's the one selling the missions to his fellow officers. Whereas the warrant officer, he's diving into the details of the mission, as far as the personalities of the guys that we're going after, as far as the terrain analysis. I mean, he's connecting the dots of information and serves as a chief of mission, you know, for the captain. So the captain can focus on his work. The team sergeant can focus on his work. And then the team sergeant, who's the next important figure on the team, he manages the NCOs, the rest of the team.
Wow.
He is the glue that keeps the team, the glue and the lubricant that keeps the machine going. He works hand in hand with each of the seniors on the team. So he's the Zulu is the highest ranking NCO on the team. And then you have the Bravo.
Okay.
The rest of these are just team guys, regular team guys on the team. From here on out.
Hold on. Let me interrupt you again real quick. We have to go to a quick break. We'll be right back with Javier Mackey. He's going to tell us what this hero did in Afghanistan. Give us just 1 second. We'll be right back. It is the Jesse Kelly Show, and I don't want to waste any time here. We have Javier Mackey, Special Forces, on the phone with us right now discussing a hero who gave his life in Afghanistan. He just kind of laid out the situation. What's the team look like? Okay, why do I have a Medal of Honor citation in front of me with this guy's name on it? What did he do?
Well, Robbie, he led an assault. So let me back up a little bit. So we were on the night. So sometime prior to January 24th, we received some information that there was a high value target in the area that we've been to before, and that there's an opportunity we can go capture, kill capture this individual. So we started our mission planning, and Robert Miller was the junior weapons sergeant on the team, or the senior weapon sergeant on the team. We had two at the time. And his sole responsibility is the weapons and training. So he spent the Lex that whole week leading up to the mission along with our other weapons sergeant, getting our Afghans ready to conduct this mission, along with myself. I'm the 18 Charlie, the engineer on the team, and my job basically is to get the logistics down, making sure we have the vehicles ready to go, and come up with any obstacle clearing plans that we'll need to disrupt along the way. So come January 24th, we get this mission. We've done the planning, we've done the rehearsals, and we sent our Afghans away to go do get a little bit of R&R before this time, before we were about to execute this mission. And we soon we got the green light to go, and the plan was for us to link up with our Afghans at a place called Checkpoint Delta, which was about, I don't know, 8 kilometers north of the fire base. We get there, Robbie and the team, we get there, and something was kind of off from the get-go. There was some confusion. We didn't recognize a lot of the Afghans that were supposed to be there. But nevertheless, we continue on with the mission. So we hop in our trucks and we continue north, and we get about 8 kilometers. We get another about 4 or 5 kilometers into the valley, and we hit our first obstacle, which was a boulder in the road. And this is important because it was only one road. There's no getting around this boulder, because on one side of the boulder is a mountain, and on the other side of the boulder is a river. And there's no driving around it. So I was tasked to go blow that boulder up. I blew it up, and we continued forward. And we got to the switchbacks, and the same thing again, approached another boulder. Well, sometime.
And Javier, sorry to interrupt. Again, speak with Javier Mackey, Green Beret. He's telling us a story. Is this something that's common? Are these boulders in the road, are you thinking this is done on purpose, or this is just the norm? I mean, it's a road but beside a mountain.
Well, this is definitely new. We spent, by this point, Rob, myself, and majority of the team has spent 2 years in this valley. And we know the people, we know the patterns, but this was new, totally new. And so we come across the second boulder, and we blew it up. And in between the interdiction of the first boulder and the second boulder, we get news from, we have some assets available to us that let us know that where the guy that we were going to, where we were going, he wasn't no longer there. He had moved across the river, and he was hunkered down on the east side of the river. This river runs north and south. So we continue onto this little plateau, and it's still dark outside. It was a very cold night. We had the moon hadn't quite crescent over the mountains, so we're still in the shadow of the lunar skylight, and we're in this deep valley, and we line up our trucks, and we did something that not a lot of people can say that they did during in Iraq or in Afghanistan, and has set up an ambush to, normally we're getting ambushed, but in this point, we were able to set up an ambush with left and right security, just like you would do in training, and ambush our enemy. And this is a very rare occasion. So we're all, but the only difference is we had a terrain feature, this river, in between us and the people we were ambushing. And once it was confirmed that these guys were walking out, we opened up our ambush and we unleashed a hellfire of destruction on these guys that lasted for quite a bit because they were still shooting back at us. And Robert Miller, who was in our second truck, he was manning the Mark 19. This is an automatic grenade launcher that shoots a 40-millimeter linked grenade, and it's about 50 rounds of or 32 rounds of pure hate coming at you if you don't, you know, if you only have one can linked together. But we usually have two or three cans linked in one mortar box. And he was getting his gun on that. And this firefight goes on for an undetermined amount of time. At the same time, we have ISR, or we have an aircraft on station that's is marking targets for us, and we're shooting. And Robbie Miller's pretty much directing fires where the ISR would, with the aircraft platform, would indicate where there were troop movement, and he would hit it up with the Mark 19, and we would shoot at those at his markings. Later, ceasefire was called. Yep.
Javier, I'm sorry to do it again. It's stinking radio. It's the way it is. Javier Mackey is being good enough to give us some a real story about a hero that we lost here on this Memorial Day. We are going to go to another quick break. We're going to be back so he can continue. And I'm glad you are taking your time and walking us through this so people can understand the situation. He's going to come back and he's going to continue to tell us what this man did, what he sacrificed for this country, for you, for me, for his teammates mostly, I'm sure. We'll be right back on the Jesse Kelly Show. It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day special to honor the fallen. And I'm going to go right back to him because I know you're on the edge of your seat. I am as well. Javier Mackey, Special Forces, is joining us. He has been telling us leading up to Robert Miller gave his life in Afghanistan, won a Medal of Honor doing it. We have a citation. I can read it for you, but it doesn't even come close to doing justice to what he did. So I'm going to hand the floor back to Javier. Javier, please continue. You guys just ambushed a bunch of guys, and you're making their lives miserable. Continue.
So the captain calls ceasefire. Each of the leaders from the trucks consolidate. And it's been decided we have to go conduct what they call a battle damage assessment. From here on, I'm going to call it just a BDA. What that basically is, we're going to identify whether or not we actually killed who we were going after, or we can capture them if they're still alive, and positively identify if there was no other civilian casualties or damages done. And so this is normally done to cover our butts, but it's also done to just to reaffirm that we actually did what we are there to do. And so we have to go north a little bit, and we cross a bridge, and then we head back south where we ambushed the individuals coming out of the compound where they were. And from what I can tell in the darkness, they had policed up all their bodies, and it was really hard to determine how many people that we hit. So that being said, just to give a brief description, so as we're walking south down the river's now on the right side of our patrol, and the trail starts to open up. It's a thin trail. It's about a meter or so wide, and it starts to open up where we have some level terraced agricultural rocky terrain. And to the right, to the left is a mountain. So we have this mountain off to our left, gently sloping up into a ridge, a finger-like landmass that protrudes downward. And at the tip of the finger would be like a little draw. And on the other side of that draw was like another finger, like ridge line that comes down going towards the river. At that little intersection where the draw was and those two fingers met was a boulder. And Robbie's up front because he speaks Pashto. He speaks French. He speaks Russian. The kid was very, he came to the team knowing multiple languages, and while he was in Afghanistan, he learned Dari and Pashto, and he was the strongest in Dari and Pashto outside of our interpreters who were also with us. And so he was helping out with herding the cats of the Afghans that were in the patrol alongside us. So we get to this point where we're crossing this little rocky alcove going towards this where this boulder is. And the Afghans who are up front, this is their country, you know, we're putting them up front. And they, you know, you hear this Allahu Akbar. And the next thing you know, you hear automatic gunfire coming from the boulder towards our direction. And our patrol opens up. The Afghans who are with us, they just bug out. They're gone. Oh. They run towards the river because there was some cover in that area, and a Marine who was attached to us, he's trying to get them back into the fight. So Robbie is left in the front of this of the formation with myself, Staff Sergeant Nick McGarry, Staff Sergeant Rob Gutierrez, and Irfan, our interpreter, right behind him. And then behind our little formation is the headquarters, like the team sergeant, the captain, the warrant officer, our 18 Fox, who's our intelligence NCO, and one other person I can't remember at the time. But anyway, the captain gets hit in this open volley. Now we're being ambushed. We just walked into a near ambush. And so immediately Rob, who's up front where that boulder was, Rob interdicts the guy with the machine gun and he kills him. And as now this is in the dark now, and the aircraft that's above has this infrared light that only can be seen in under our nods. And so they're marking targets that are in our area, and they actually flooded this little draw where Rob was kind of stuck at, and it was nothing but him and Afghan, you know, insurgents. And so he's by himself. I'm about 50 meters behind him, and we're dealing with our own problems that I'll go into later. At this time, Rob is he's operating the SAW, a 249. This is a small squad automatic weapon, and it shoots a 5.56 round belt fed gun. And he had a chopped down version of it, and he was the only one in our patrol that didn't have a suppressor. So he engaged and killed 15 to 25 people within a 3-minute span. He also threw numerous hand grenades before he was hit. During his exchange of fire, he was hit in the right, underneath his right armpit. It was a through and through. The last words he said was "break contact," and he was heading towards me. And this is a mission that we did everything according to our SOP, and everything went down according to our SOP up until this happened. And so, you know, Rob laid down his final burst of gunfire, killing five of the remaining guys in his area, which we were still trying to deal with at the same time. So at the same time when Rob was hit, he said, you know, break contact. What had been going on with us is my captain, he was, like I said, he was the first one in the exchange of fire to get hit, and he was down, and they were about another 50 meters behind the position where we're at. Where Gutierrez and McGarry and I, we were trapped basically in the X, and we were still getting, you know, we were taking effective gunfire at less than 25 meters. And lucky for us, we didn't have, we had suppressed M4s, and we were able to interdict our targets effectively thanks to the ISR platform identifying enemy combatants behind a wall that was like 5-10 meters away from our area. And it was playing whack-a-mole for like 10 minutes. And during that time, the exchange of fire, I was hit. I received my first gunshot to the chest, and I stayed in the fight. It hit my magazine. At the time, the Army started issuing these steel magazines, and I mean, I didn't really feel the impact until I went to go grab for a magazine, and I couldn't use it to shoot my weapon. I hear Rob say break contact, so I change mags and I go straight to, you know, I'm going suppressive fires, and he gives this last burst, and I wait for him to pass me so I can do my automatic burst, and he didn't. And so I look over, I hit my floodlight on my rifle to see what was happening, and he was down. So I remember getting up and running over to, you know, saying Rob's hit, and I ran up to him to see if, you know, maybe he tripped or whatever. And he was on his last breath, and I quickly went back. I go and I told the guys, I go, hey, look, Rob is hit. I need you guys to come help me. So McGeary, Rob Gutierrez, and myself ran through gunfire to go back to Robbie to start rendering first aid. And Nick McGeary provided covering fire during that maneuver. He stayed there with the interpreter, who also provided some security for him. Mind you, we're still in the X. We're still in the kill zone of the fire of the enemy's ambush, and we're doing the best we can to get ourselves out of it. And during this time period, our SOP wasn't really. I kind of broke our SOP at this point by going to Rob, which under normal circumstances, we would have left them there until we had gotten the fire superiority and the ability to outmaneuver the enemy and then get to them as quick as possible. But I broke protocol on that and went directly to them with the JTAC, which was another big no-no. He's the one guy controlling fires. So under gunfire, we started to render first aid to Rob, and it was at this time where I realized that Rob was dead. It was a through and through. I couldn't find the gunshot wound at first. When I finally did, it was a chest, you know, I applied chest seal to it, and from that point on, there was nothing else I can do. I didn't find the exit wound until later, and I mean, there was nothing I could do about it. I've beat myself up over it for years, and I've come to accept that nobody would have survived that gunshot wound. And it's important that I continue to tell this story because hopefully both Rob Gutierrez and Nicholas McGeary, who are both up for the Medal, you know, they've been recommended for the Medal of Honor as well. Their stories need to be told, and I'll continue to tell the story as I know it. Rob Gutierrez continued to fight it out while Nick McGeary continued to deal with the...
Hold on, Javier. I'm sorry to do it again, my brother. I think this is probably a great time. Let me pause and bring you back. Again, I don't want to interrupt this story. I don't want to screw it up. So hang on real quick on the Jesse Kelly Show. We'll be right back so Javier Mackey can finish this up, please. It is the Jesse Kelly Show, back again with Javier Mackey telling us the story of Robbie Miller, Medal of Honor earner in Afghanistan, and a couple other Green Berets who were up for the Medal of Honor. Javier, I'm sorry to interrupt. I had to do that again. Please continue, sir.
So Rob Gutierrez and ourselves, we're at this point where we have to make some really tough decisions as to movement of Robbie's body and figuring out how we're going to complete this mission. And so it was determined that Rob Gutierrez was going to call in some more he's going to call in some aircraft strafing runs with the A-10, and they were going to be danger close. And in between the gun runs, we were going to attempt to move Rob's body. So the aircraft came through. They got their cleared hot, and you know they rained down their weaponry on top of us. At about, it was danger close. Whatever danger close by definition in the Air Force regs and Army regulations, we very well met that criteria. And in between gun runs, we attempted to move Rob's body, and we just couldn't do it. I mean, the terrain was rocky. Between trying to get his weapon and all this other stuff, it was just too hard. And then the second gun run came in, and after that gun run came in, and came a hellfire of RPG gunfire and small arms fire from one of the ridge lines, from a top of one of the ridge lines. And so Rob and I, we interdicted those targets. We suppressed their fires. And by this time, the Marine who had been trying to hurt the cats with the Afghans had reappeared, and he was like, "Hey, I'm here." And we, you know, I made the determination. I was like, "All right, hey, we're going to jump over this. There's a wall behind us, and we're going to go over this wall. We're going to try to communicate to our headquarters guys who are, you know, a couple hundred meters behind us that what the situation is and see if they can maneuver up to our position." What ended up happening was I realized I had gotten shot again, and this time it hit the push to talk to my radio. The only operating radio that we had was the JTACS, and he was controlling air with it. The decision was made by Gutierrez that he was going to maneuver with the Marine to a different spot to suppress, to get more CAS or, you know, some close air support fires on various aspects of the terrain so that I can maneuver back to the CCP and report everything that was going on. Now, mind you, we still have an element of guys across the river, you know, pulling security, but they couldn't fire because we were positioned in between them and the enemy. So the only people that could actually fire were those who were on the ground. And that was, you know, Gutierrez, McGarry, what was Rob Miller, who we had to leave behind, and the Marine and the rest of the team. So I eventually made it back to the CCP, and Nick McGarry, he had made it back. Now, Nick, when we went to go fight it out with to go pull Rob, Nick was pulling security with our interpreter, and Nick was he had effectively taken out eight guys that were I mentioned the whack-a-mole situation. He had effectively taken out 8 to 12 guys that was behind this wall, but with by himself, you know, that fighting through hand grenades, tossing them back. And we get back to the firebase, and he's telling us everything that would happen. And he's clearly shaken up. I think I'm the most damaged at this point, you know, after being shot twice, and now I'm seeing having Rob die in my arms, and now I'm looking at my captain. My captain is blue, and trying to take it all in. And so Nick McGarry, he put us in a security posture. Rob Gutierrez secured the area for a medevac. And then on the first bird that came, they put myself and Captain Cusick on the bird because he was injured. So what happened after that was the Nick McGarry linked up with Rob Gutierrez along with the rest of the team, and they organized a counter assault between the two of them. They used the cast from the aircraft and their maneuvering on the ground to outmaneuver the enemy, killing several more, and then being able to recover the body of Rob Miller.
Jeez.
So
Javier, Is there anything else, anyone else you want to acknowledge really quickly before we sign off? And I cannot thank you enough for sharing the story of obviously not just Robbie Miller, of all you heroes. My goodness, man. Is there anyone else needs a quick acknowledgement before we go?
3rd Special Forces Group, 3rd Battalion is where we hail. We have, I think right now, see Rob Miller, Matt Williams, Ron Scherer. You know, we have 3 solid Medal of Honor recipients and a hand, you know, there's easily a couple other dozen more that I can say that were outstanding heroes for the last 20 years. And we fought side by side for 20 years in Afghanistan without complaining. We loved what we did. Along the way, we lost a lot of our good friends. And, you know, it's really hard to talk about. I'm trying to hold it back. But that's what this weekend is all about. It's not about the hamburgers and hot dogs. It's about remembering our buddies and remembering, you know, the values in which our nation is founded on.
Amen, and, my brother. Amen. Yeah. I just want to tell you that was outstanding. I know that was not easy. The country is better off for having heard his story and the story of all you heroes. Semper Fi, my brother.
Semper Fi.
Told you it was going to be a heavier, different show. All right, we have more on Memorial Day.
This is an iHeart podcast.